Hi, I'm Kyla.
And this is Jay.
And you're listening to Strange Fruit by Louisville Public Media.
Welcome back to listeners. So, Doc, we've talked the last few weeks about trans representations in Hollywood. We talked about Pose, which has been the largest trans cast in television history.
Yes.
There's been talk about the one movie that was coming out about the trans man who was a bar owner. And they had this thing that was going to play, you know, she was a cis woman, but she was going to play this trans role. And a lot of trans actors. What was her name? Do you remember?
No.
You know, the white woman. She was going to play Scarlett Johansson. Yeah, right. And so she was going to be playing this trans character. And folk in Hollywood are like, yo, we have enough at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Well-known or even lesser-known trans actors that can play these roles. We're tired of trans face. We're tired of cis people playing trans roles. It's been demonstrated that trans people have the skill sets to tell their own stories, play their own roles. And so I'm really appreciative of more and more trans narratives, and especially when trans people tell their own stories. And so I was really delighted when I...
Yeah, because we did. We had Brian Michael Smith on
here. Yeah, he was on Queen Sugar.
To talk about his role on Queen Sugar.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, you have Angelica Ross. You have all kinds of people on Pose. I mean, that's a really large cast. So you have people who can play these roles and tell their own stories. And so I was really delighted, Doc, when I went to id.vice.com and saw a cool new project, or at least it was new to me. It's been going on for a couple of years, but it's called the American Boys Project. And it's a photo series that lives primarily on Instagram, but it seeks to show diverse and inclusive trans identities, trans masculine identities. It's called the American Boy Project. And it really, I think, probably from my opinion, seeks to challenge ideas of what American boyhood and manhood means, what trans masculinity means, and all those kinds of things. And so we wanted to invite to the show both a participant in that project and then also the author and photographer. So listeners, please welcome to the show participant Lazarus Letcher and photographer Saraya Zaman. How are you all?
Hey, y'all.
Hi.
Hi.
Good. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah. So let's start with you, Saraya. You are the photographer and author of this project, the creator. Tell our listeners a bit, please, what the American Boy Project is and what gave you the idea to start this project.
Well, it's a photo series, a portrait series of individuals from all across the country who identify as transmasculine. The idea for this project came really out of a personal position of growing up, really not having any role models or influences for a gender identity outside of the binary. So for me, it was like when I started learning about they, them pronouns and people who don't really fit into the like cisgender norms, I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. And so I wanted to kind of explore that through photography. And I found a few Instagram pages that I went down the rabbit hole and I was like, okay, you know what? I really want to go and capture these people and tell their stories. And it kind of just snowballed from there to this like kind of a project with I photographed, I think, 33 people from all across the country. And I just wanted to kind of like bring these stories and these people into the limelight, I suppose, because they're such important stories to be told.
No, yes. And I'm so excited about this project. I mean, I can't wait till the book comes out and all this kind of. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about how your project over the years has changed or shifted scope? How has it broadened from once you first started and so on?
It's pretty interesting, actually. I feel like everybody that I photographed as part of this project I found on social media and kind of keeping an eye on and tracking people on social media, even over the 3 years, has changed so much. There's like the evidence of storytelling and like people advocating for the trans community has just grown and grown and grown and grown and grown. So it was kind of really humble at the beginning. And now when I look and try and find people, it's like there's so many great stories out there, which is really important to share. And it's kind of become a bigger than me in a sense, like trying to tell these stories. I guess it's my anthem.
Yeah, I love it. No, I believe I read you're natively. You're a native of Australia. Is that correct?
Yes, I am. I'm from Australia. So, you know, it's like I can kind of view American culture from this kind of outsider's lens,
yeah.
I suppose. So it's really, you know, interesting. It was interesting for me to travel around and kind of like have, I think everybody has this kind of notion of what Americana is and boyhood from across the country. And so it's really kind of interesting to kind of view that from an outsider's lens, and then also like break that down for everybody to be like, well, actually, this is what's really happening on the ground,
yeah.
from like, you know, Colorado to Utah to Virginia to Washington. Like, this is what youth and people look like today. And I thought that was really important.
Absolutely. And before mm-hmm. I come to you, Lazarus, I want to say I do appreciate that it's called the American Boy Project, because I do think, Doc, no matter, depending on where you're situated in the U.S. So if you were to ask me as a Southern Black gay man from Kentucky, what does an all-American boy look like? I'm probably going to describe you some corn-fed white boy from, you know, the hills of Kentucky. If you yeah. ask a New York, someone from New York, what is an all-American New Yorker? He's going to have an accent. He's going to be Puerto Rican.
Yeah.
You know, so I appreciate that in the same ways that this project seems to challenge what people think of when they think of being transgender or masculinity. Also, what does it mean to be all-American? And that's gonna vary depending on where one lives, how much one makes, what one's culture is. Lazarus, and talk about... Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and I feel like, too, like, I think it's really, really great that you have transmasculine identity showcased at various stages of their own journeys. Why was it important to you to have this kind of variety when in your photography when it comes to showing transmasculine identities? Why was it important to show the different stages of that identity?
I think people at different stages have different stories to tell. You know, their journey along the transmasculine spectrum is going to change over the course of the years. So it was really important for me to find people who were, you know, who are just starting hormones, as opposed to people who have kind of been on testosterone and living their life for like 6 years. So yeah.
I love it. Lazarus, how did you come to be a part of this project? Did you solicit or submit, rather, your story? Or when you contacted about Soraya, how did you come to be a part of this project initially?
Soraya slid into my DMs.
Yes, DMs. Slid on in there.
You know, come to think about. And at first I was kind of skeptical. Like, I, being trans on social media, I get... a wide gamut of messages, I guess, is a kind way to put it. And they said that they were working on this photo series, and I was like, I'm sure you are. And then I clicked on the link, and I was like, oh, these are beautiful. And I just never seen trans folks photographed with such care and without such, like, an emphasis kind of on this, like, hyper-masculinity, especially for folks on the trans-masculine spectrum. It's rare to see representations of us that showcase our soft sides too, and don't have that, you know, be portrayed in a negative light, and to also be non-binary and be a part of this project. I really appreciate that they have folks who identify as trans dudes or just dudes or non-binary like me. So I said yes right away once I started seeing the images.
I love it.
How was it for you to write your own narrative and to discuss your journey and your identity? I love that each photo is accompanied by each person's story. So was it hard for you to tell your story, or was it fun? Like, how was it? How was it in terms of telling your own story to go with the image?
Yeah, I'd say it's fun. It was fun. Soraya asked a lot of questions that I'd never really been asked directly, and to get them from, like, another gender fluid person of color, it was, you know, a lot different had it been someone else posing the questions. And, you know, trying to keep in mind too that, like, these words could maybe help someone else who's, like, I grew up in the middle of nowhere, Indiana. And if I would have had something like the American Boys Project to look at and recognize I'm not alone, that would have changed a lot of my childhood. So it was just really nice to kind of dive in and reflect on my transition.
Lazarus, you mentioned that you get a wide range of interactions from people online. And for my trans friends, I hear frequently about you know, it's probably just the same for me as a person of color to a different degree, but a lot of times people are either eroticizing or fetishizing you. So when people interact with me on social media or even on dating sites, there's some kind of fetishizing of me and my embodiment. What have you had positive interactions by and large, Lazarus, or have you had people who are really kind of fetishizing or even policing trans bodies? And so talk a bit about what reception has been from the general public in terms of people who have discovered the project.
I'd say it's been overwhelmingly really positive. And I've heard Janet Mock say this in interviews too, but like Instagram is kind of heaven for trans folks.
Okay.
There's not there's still, you know, the transphobia we have to navigate everywhere, and especially as trans people of color. But Instagram is like where I also found a lot of images that made me feel less alone and recognize that non-binary folks existed. I definitely do get a lot of the fetishization, and it's hard being non-binary and folks really want to put me into that trans male box, which doesn't quite feel like a home for me. And you know, I wear whatever I want, and I get some clapback from other trans masculine folks sometimes. Like right now I'm wearing some sunflower booty shorts because they look good.
Yes.
And some folks who, you know, like some folks might clap back at that, but usually I get nothing but love, which I definitely need.
I love it. And a funny thing, Lazarus, I'm also wearing some sunflower booty shorts. So, child, you who wore better? No,
and,
teasing.
No, listeners. What for both of you, this question is for both of you. What do you both hope will come from this project? How has it changed you both in any kind of way? And what do you hope that audiences will get from this project?
Well, obviously, I'm pretty excited about the book that's going to be coming out April next year, because this book is actually will live so much larger than the Instagram feed. The Instagram feed is just a portrait image of each person I've photographed, while the book will be a series of images that kind of goes into a little bit more depth about each individual, and it will also have direct quotes from the stories. From when I, you know, for instance, when I sat down as Lazarus, we recorded the conversation, and the words will come directly from something that he's that they've said. So that, in a sense, is like really exciting for me and the next iteration of this project, because there's so much more to offer when it comes out. And I feel like it's a really, it's going to be one of those books that there's so many people out there who are really curious about the, you know, gender nonconforming community. And this is a really great, going to be a great resource for people to like dive in head first and learn about people's stories and connect on a human level. And hopefully that will help like break down a lot of the stigma and barriers and prejudice against the trans and non-binary community.
I love it. I love
that
it.
That for me is really super exciting.
I love it. Yes. Lazarus, what do you hope that people would take from perhaps seeing your picture or hearing your story or those of other participants?
Yeah, for me, I just really think it's something that the trans community needs right now. Trans masculine representation on mainstream media is kind of non-existent, and when it does exist, it's usually skinny white dudes. And I really appreciate the diversity of this project, of folks at different stages of their transition from all over the country, different races, different backgrounds, different understandings of their gender. And it just really shows that there's no one way to be trans masculine. So I just hope that the next generation of trans kids, you know, can go to a library and get this book and see that they're not alone. I think that's going to be huge.
I love it. Mm-hmm. Listeners, I want to play for you all a little bit from the American Boys Project YouTube page. This is just a little short introductory video, so you all can certainly go there and see some of the folks who represent it. But I want to just let you all hear this, listeners, so you get an idea of how cool this project is.
Hey there. My name is Soraya. I'm the photographer and author of the American Boys Project. I thought it'd be really cool if you could meet just some of the people that I've photographed over the last little while. So we decided to make you this little video. Take a look.
My name is Chella Mann.
Hello. My name is Thomas. I'm 28 years old. I live in Social Circle, Georgia, and I'm a trans man.
Hello, my name is Sam Choi. I am a transgender man from Seattle, Washington.
My name is Tyler. I am a 22-year-old trans male from South Florida.
My name is Teddy. I represent Kansas City in the American Boys Project.
Hi, my name is Jimmy. I'm 28 years old, and I reside in Richmond, Virginia. I identify myself as a transgender male.
Hello, my name is Emmett Claren. I am a transgender man, and I am from Utah. I'm just a guy, but I'm different, and people are afraid of what they don't know.
The American Boys Project showcases transgender and gender nonconforming folks from all across the country, living their lives as themselves in our society where it's sometimes difficult to be ourselves.
This project is more than a book. It's more than a collection of photographs, and so much more than a string of syllables. They create some of the most incredible stories that you'll ever read in your entire life, I assure you.
This book is really important because if I saw this as a kid, it probably would have changed things for the better for me. It's really hard to find trans representation in media, so this book could change people's lives.
So listeners, that's a little bit of the video. And again, you can go to American Boys Project on YouTube and see some of the images and hear from some of the folks. Before I let you all go, Saraya, my last question. Do you have anybody from Kentucky as part of this project just yet?
I don't. I'm so sorry. Yeah.
Well, that's
everywhere but Kentucky.
That's okay. Listen, we have listeners all over the world. I'm sure that someone here in Kentucky wants to be a part of this project. I'm not sure if you're still taking folks, but I do encourage, especially our Kentucky listeners, to go check out the Instagram page. Yo, submit your stories. Y'all represent for the 502. But but really, beyond that, Saraya and Lazarus, we really appreciate you both for being with us today and for creating this beautiful project and bringing it to fruition.
Yeah, it's absolutely beautiful. It's so necessary and so needed. And we're so excited that y'all took time out of your day to talk to us. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye, y'all.
Thank you.
All right, so let's take a break, Doc. Let the people know who we are.
You're listening to Strange Fruit by Louisville Public Media.
This story was a story of a lot of firsts for me.
I encountered a lot of weird situations journalistically with this.
Even kind of having known that in the back of my head, I was sort of confronted with it.
You know what it's like to hear the stories, but what's it like to make them? And what do our reporters learn that doesn't make it into the newscast?
I'm still really curious about these questions, and so I would imagine readers and listeners are too.
That's what you'll get on Recut, a behind-the-news podcast from WFPL, every Tuesday and Thursday at recut.org.
Welcome back to listeners. So Doc, Pride season, at least in Louisville, just ended. But, you know, it kind of runs. I don't know. When the first Pride, because you have, like, white Prides and you have black Prides. And black Prides, you know, like, all year long. You have, like, Texas, D.C., like, Labor Day weekend, Memorial Day. So, like, black Pride season basically runs basically, like, almost 75% of the year. Mm-hmm. But most white Prides are really held, like, in June, right, in the kind of traditional kind of throwback homage to Stonewall. And so, of course, we just ended Pride season in Louisville with Kentuckiana Pride. We do have Louisville Pride coming up in September. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you and I have talked on the show over the last several years. We talked personally about what we perceive to be a very Pride is white. Okay,
yes,
let's call it what it is, right?
Yes.
And not even just Pride itself, but going into nightclubs, going to drag shows. You know, when we because we live in Louisville, which is not a majority black city, no matter how much black nightlife there is, when we go to like gay places, child, it's going to be some kind of
public gay spaces,
awkward interaction with white folk.
White,
you know, you're going to experience gay men sexism, all those things. And so I was really, really delighted to see this poem. And listeners, I'm sure y'all saw it. It went viral a couple months ago. And it's a really wonderful poem about all those kinds of things. And so we had to hunt down the poet, the creator of this poem. So please welcome to the show. I want to say the name correctly. Uwazi Yazumani. Did I say that right?
Yes.
Uwazi,
yes.
Welcome.
Really, really
how welcome
good
to the
job,
show.
Good job.
Thank you. How are you today?
I'm fantastic. How are you guys today? I'm loving this energy.
Oh, well, thank you.
When you get a phone call like that, something about you just pulls up.
All right. Well, good.
A lot of pull upness.
Come on and pull up.
Into that.
Come on and pull up. We love
it. I am perched.
Well, good. We are glad you are here. Tell our listeners, number one, we're gonna play this poem for y'all listeners, but tell our listeners what inspired you to write this poem, and then we'll talk a little bit later about how it felt when it went viral, but what led you, number one, to create this piece? Was it off the dome, or did you write this and been perfecting it? How did it come to be?
Well, Parades, which was written about 2 years ago, it was written in 2016. I was commissioned to write a work for a show entitled Between Two Worlds, a Black hymn on race, religion, and rites of passage, a Black gay hymn on race, religion, and rites of passage. And my mentor, Harrison Guy, who is also the artistic director of Urban Souls Dance Company here in Houston, he had auditions for it, and he was surprised that I didn't audition as a dancer. I did audition for a dancer, but I also auditioned as a poet. And when I got commissioned to do the work, he just gave me a few descriptor words to play around with and write. And one of the words was parades. The other one was Rain on My Parade. One of my favorite Broadway plays is Funny Girl, and the song Don't Rain on My yes. Parade, which was a big hit made by Frank Sinatra, Shirley Bassey, and many other people who've done a rendition of that song. And so it's kind of a parody on the Don't Rain on My Parade song, but talking about the what pride is for Black gay men, Black gender sexuality, nonconforming men and women and even youth. And so I kind of developed that poem. He said he wanted me to be my sarcastic, catty, catty self. And, yes. and so I said, I let loose. And that poem is about 2 years old. And then I performed it at an open mic, a pride theme open mic. And I didn't expect it to go viral, but it did. So, and here we are.
Yes. No, we absolutely love the poem. I mean, it is something that we've been like, yes, like when we both heard it and saw it, we were both like, yes, this is exactly what we've been talking about.
Yes. People kept tagging me, and I'm like, why do people keep tagging me in this video? What is this video? I'm like, I don't have time to be watching no video. And people, I just kept getting tagged, and so we were finally like, let's watch and see what this is about.
And see what it's about. And it is, it's like, you know, something that both of us have been going to gay prides forever. I mean, now, like, both of us are 38.
Don't do that. No, let me tell you.
Both of us are 38.
No, because listen, let me tell you. She is 6 months older than me. My birthday was a few days ago. So for the last 6 months, I've been reminding her that she's older than me.
Well,
and now we're finally the same.
Since both of us are 38.
Touche. Okay.
And we both came out very, very young. You know, we thought going to Pride initially, you know, when we were 15, 16, going to Pride festivals, thinking like, oh, yes, this wonderful place where we're going to be embraced. Yeah. And I mean, you know, and then we encounter like all these microaggressions due to race or due to gender performance presentations, so on and so forth. And so we really, really appreciated your words and your sentiment and the fire you brought to the mic around something that has really, really plagued us about going to celebrate ourselves in a space that clearly is not for ourselves, right?
Yeah. I wonder, like, so what has the reaction been for people? I mean, obviously, have you gotten a lot of love? Have you gotten those hashtag white lives, you know, all lives matter or not all white people?
Right.
Have you gotten some pushback from people or has it been mostly love?
It has been mostly love. More specifically, there have been people from London, the Netherlands, Australia, Greenland, even Canada, and just all over the United States, as far as specifically areas with where the Black gay culture is so central for people, like New York, where Stonewall is, Philadelphia, Chicago, Oakland, a lot of different places where people have reached out to me and said, "You inspired us." Like people who are non-binary and gender sexuality non-conforming were saying that this is also important because not only did your words speak, but you know your outfit spoke to a lot of things. And she was one of the gentlemen who spoke to me, he was just like everything about it was right.
Yeah.
As far as even being in a spoken word environment, the spoken word environment here is very, 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 I wouldn't even say homophobic. I would just say very ignorant and very bigot as far as it pertains to the realities and the openness and transparency of what it means to be a Black gay man and to share those complexities and being willing to share those complexities on such a platform. So I've received a lot of love, but I've probably received like maybe 5 or 6 messages where people are like, well, you know, we shouldn't be asking white gays for acceptance. And I said, if you were listening to the poem, nothing about parade says we're asking for acceptance. It's just getting people to getting white gays to understand that we started all of this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason you don't know that we started all of this is because your history books won't teach you that. You see the fruits of our labor.
Yeah.
You don't see how white gays didn't align themselves against the state until the civil rights movement and the Black Power movements that happened prior to the Stonewall riots. So all white gays have done and what they're continuing to do is capitalize off the revolutionary organization that people like Marsha P. Johnson and Sylvia Rivera and Willie Ninja and Dorian Corey and your Venus Extravaganza
yes.
did before Pride was even a thing. And so if you don't understand that, then that is probably one of the root causes and the dissonance of your microaggressions and of your fetishing of Black men and Black women and our Black youth and all of these other different mechanisms of violence and hate and ignorance towards the Black gay community.
Absolutely. And Doc, mm-hmm. you talk about this with your students. I mean, we talk all the time about how first of all, the white gay children, they think they invented everything.
Yes.
They think that RuPaul invented category. If I hear one more white child say category is, I'm serving you.
The library is
I'm
open.
Grocery store fit. It's like, no.
But
what does it mean for them to co-opt and try to perform an embodiment, a culture, a language, right? A performativity that literally came from Black and brown, queer and trans people. What do you make of that when you talk to your students about that?
I think that it's, again, it's indicative of the way in which whiteness functions. And so queer whiteness is no different than heteronormative, heteropatriarchal whiteness, right?
Yeah.
So everybody is socialized within the same beast. And so if you are socialized to, one, be racist and or a racist apologist, right? So I'm not racist, I have Black friends, right? That kind of racist person. You basically function in the same way. So you're fascinated with cultures and races outside of yourself. You're fascinated with the language, with the dress, with the aesthetic, but you want to erase the Black precedent, right? Similar to, like, within queer spaces, they want to erase the Black and trans and gender nonconforming precedent, right? So all the ways in which we know and get to Stonewall, right, and we're talking about Sylvia, we're talking about Marsha, we're talking about Miss Major, we're talking about... we get into house ball culture and we talk about reading and voguing and all those other kinds of things. The white gay children, the white cis gay children tend to really revel in these things and appreciate these things. And they get really mad at you when you, inform them that these come from Blackness. These come from, Black transness, Black gender nonconformingness. They get really affronted and really, really upset and really, really mad because they want to own it in a way in which they think that Blackness and any cultural production from marginalized groups or people of color especially that they have the right to have, right? So I feel like it's something that you see across the board. It's the same thing with it's the same thing with the white women coming up to me in the elevator. Oh my God, where'd you get those big hoop earrings? It's like, girl, go on.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Go on with that.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So it's like
Absolutely.
it's no different. And the fact that a lot of white cis gay folk don't see that, this is functioning in the same way that racism and co-optation and cultural appropriation function in mainstream society is a problem.
Let's take a break, y'all. Let's listen, y'all, to Parades. You can find this poem on YouTube and we'll share it on our social media, listeners. Now, it does have some strong language in it, so if you don't want to hear that part, just skip ahead about 4 minutes and catch up with us there.
I came dressed for the occasion. Inclined and enthralled with a sudden sensation to place myself right in the middle of these festivities said to be prideful. Lined with 6 colors meant to represent inclusion, so pardon the intrusion, but where is the color Black? And exactly whose pride are we talking about? My pride, your pride, Black pride, white pride? No. Not the pride of this 5'10" Black man with broad shoulders and a presence that can't be met at eye level and no elbow room to settle in this would-be momentous occasion held annually. Pride. An event held annually by gay people meant to make a note that it's not about color. It's about coexistence, humanity, seeing each other as human beings just as long as you and your friends who look like you get to sit comfortably, flaunt your floats, party in your prejudice, ignore the presence of melanin, then force a series of racially dynamic conversations, but still leave blackness up for negotiation. So today I'm here to say, hey, white gays, here I am. Don't tone police me on issues of color, because I refuse to be a politically correct black brother. Instead, I'm bringing black clouds to shut down this parade. Simply put, I'm throwing shade. Yes. And dragging your insistence to believe that the black gay right to representation and existence is something these Abercrombie and bitch queens have been falsely representing. Talking about humanity, organizing their committee meetings with a lack of color and limited seating from their big black dick, mandingo fetishes and fantasies of us to their racist, passive-aggressive scapegoating. Yes, that's right. When pride rolls around and somehow it's time to start promoting diversity, somehow you're right in our faces, adding splashes of our cocoa brown shades to your promo flyers, your promo videos, just to make a note that if you look a little bit closer, you'll see three or four black people floating around. But you see, I can smell the social exclusion from a mile away. Yours is saying you couldn't care less about what it means to be black and gay. So don't tell me to calm down. That's something I won't do. You don't believe in black gay representation? Fuck you. You talk about diversity but can't even have conversations about race. And it's insane. It's even more irritating than only seeing white gay couples widely represented in the human rights campaign. You see, black has always been stolen as a means for you to be seen, from our fashion sense to our lingo. Yes, and what's the thing, bitch? And you better. To the first rock thrown at Stonewall, to the motivation behind your cultural appropriation, we've been the driving force of getting your life and conscious creativity, all the while tolerating racist, colorblind passivity. We've been the equilibrium, the subsistence. Yet you've never really understood Marsha P. Johnson's political resistance. But every year, it's the same six-colored flag, and you wave it as if you're a constituent to what it means. You know what? Maybe it's not about color. Maybe it's about the erasure of it and casually going to and fro when it's of benefit and of necessity to you, while you turn your backs on our realities and our truths. This has been a storm that many of you snowflake queens have been passionate about antagonizing. But bottom line, you can't have color without color. And recognizing this unprecedented march that's about to take place on your Wonder Bread ass. Because our footsteps will be acknowledged one by one by one, despite what you refuse to see. And in spite of our communal vices you place under a repressive magnifying glass, you really want to help? You really want to be an ally, Snow Bunny? Then stop saying you see my black ass as a human being, because race is a topic that makes you uncomfortable. You really want to help? Acknowledge and respect the oppression that we have walked in for decades, because it's more than just a goddamn parade. This is about change. So, get ready, white gays, because we're a coming. Confused about the aforementioned news, will show you something. Because nobody, I said nobody, will ever shut us out of another parade.
Wow.
Oh, my God. I love that.
Yeah, let's, yes. First of all, let's give it up. Let's give it up, y'all.
It was so hard not to signify while we were listening to
child,
it.
Yeah, trying to keep it cute for the radio.
Yes.
Oh, my God. I mean, I don't even know where to go from here. I mean, let's talk a bit about you, because people may not know, but you are, I know that you're a choreographer, right? And so talk a bit about your background. Have you always been into the arts? Have you found, I know that for me as a black gay man child growing up, like I found a lot of solace in the arts. And of course I did a little musical theater myself, Doc, as you know, so like the arts kind of was my safe haven. I know that for some of our people, they may find it in the church or Doc, like you and I both found it in books. Talk a bit about what the arts have done for you in terms of finding your own identity or to what degree they've helped form your identity itself.
Absolutely. The arts has been a very, very integral part in shaping my identity. It started with watching Video Soul. Yes. And seeing groups like TLC and seeing Missy Elliott, who I really attribute to as the epitome of creativity, and seeing groups like TLC, Waterfalls just did something to me. And, I really didn't understand the messages until I got got older, I was like, wow, they were talking about HIV. They were talking about survival apparatuses that take place in the underserved neighborhoods, well, in the quote unquote hood, as far as it. And I didn't get that until I got older. All I saw was the visual aspect of that. And then as I got older, I was like, oh, they're talking about safe sex. They're talking about sex positivity, but being safe within this practice of sex positivity, all of these different things. And to be able to be that person getting up and doing dance moves in the middle of the living room and moving furniture out the way and having my mom yelling at me to turn the music down and all of those different things. But dance has always been kind of the center of who I am creatively. And dance and music has always been the center of that. And then spoken word, I started writing poetry when I was in sixth grade. I had a teacher named Mr. Akbar Harrison. And in his enrichment class, he would always tell us to write. He says, I want you to write about this. I want you to give me about 4 or 5 lines. It's got a rhyme. And then I want you to get up and do it in front of the class. And of course, I always had the best poems. And he would always call me, and I would get up and, you know, I wrote a poem about like Burger King, or I wrote a poem about what it means to be original. And that's where I really, really, that's why I guess my gift for it was nurtured. And then when I got to high school, I had a teacher named Kimberly Coggin who taught me all of the poetic devices and how to really sharpen my reading and sentence structure and all of those different things. And she really, really sewed into me as far as being a poet. And when she saw that Parades had went viral, she was just like, she like called me crying and saying, oh my God, you know, she was like, I didn't manifest this or anything. She's real spiritual like that. And so the arts have always been kind of like my guiding light through life, and really just being able to navigate and really share that transparent truth with the masses.
Well, I mean, you are absolutely phenomenal. Where can our audience, who I know is inspired and uplifted by your poem, where can they find more of your work? Do you have a website, or just let us know how we can keep tabs on you, keep in touch, and keep getting blessed with your art form?
Absolutely. You can follow me on Facebook at Uwazi Isikumba Yazamani. But if you type in Uwazi, you'll find both of my pages. Right now, unfortunately, I'm in Facebook jail.
You said something about 45 and somebody reported you.
Yeah, somebody reported me because I said something about Trump. But that's neither here nor there. You can also follow me on Instagram at Uwazi_Zamani. That's Zamani. You can follow me on Instagram. If you type in Uwazi, you'll find it. You can also follow my poetry page. When I first started really getting into writing commission works on Facebook, I go, one of my old stage names, I'm making a transition from that stage name, but my old stage name was Sleepless Nights the Poet, and you can follow that page. There are a few works on there that I've done before. I have a few works about sexual abuse. I have some poems, some love poems on there, some poems about HIV on there. So it's a lot of content to pull from. And I'm currently working on my first collection of poems, which is entitled Possessing Authority, Black Gay Retrospective. And so that will be, I'm looking, the trajectory is probably next year. So okay. Be on the lookout for that. I'll keep you updated with that. But those are all of my pages. And I'm currently building a website with all this newfound fame.
All right. Yes. Well, I'll tell you what, Uwazi, we are so delighted to have met you and made your acquaintance. And now you're welcome to come back anytime. Yes. Even if you just want to come back and cut up. But we are so happy to have seen your success. You know, obviously we root for our people and have seen your brilliance go viral, but also with such an important message. Because our people frequently go viral, but I think that your message was something that was particularly that resonated with us and that was really, really needed to be heard. And so we had to have you on the show. We were so happy that you were eager and willing to come on the show and bless our audience with all your brilliance. And so please take care and come back anytime, okay?
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
Yes, be well.
Yes,
bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye-bye. Y'all have a great day.
All right, Doc. So thank you to Uwazi. That was so, he has so much energy. That was
I know. It was real fun.
That was a good old time.
It was like talking with an old friend.
Yeah. We're just going to say, we've been having fun. When we get Butch-queens, Black Butch-queens on the show, child, we really do be having a good old time, don't we?
I think so.
We be having a festival of time.
It was the best.
So that was cool. And Uwazi is doing such brilliant work. And I'm just so happy to see all the success for him. And hopefully he'll come back soon. So. I want to say thank you to you and to Missy for a wonderful, wonderful time. I came over. Missy had a birthday party.
Yes.
And we partied with the Jackson family. And then, of course, you got
and
me
it's
tickets.
Always a cut up and a key with
baby,
the Jackson.
Baby, it's listeners, let me tell you something. Y'all missing out. You know, y'all missing out. The Jackson family is a real
treat.
God. And then, of course, you got me, as is our annual tradition, you got me tickets for Entertainer of the Year pageant on Sunday.
Yes.
I had a fantastic time. And so... you know, so I'm getting old. You know what I'm saying?
I know.
You know, I used to run the streets on my birthday. Like
yeah.
I used to be
like I was
in the
like,
nightclub,
you, like, I
dancing
you,
all night.
I talked to you the next day after your birthday.
I did.
Early in the morning.
I tricked you, didn't I?
Yeah, early in the morning, and like
tell them
yeah,
this is what
I said.
I was like, girl, I woke up. What did I say?
No, yeah, yeah. You were like, I was like, hey, and I was like, good morning, Booters, and you were like. You were like, good morning. I just woke up on somebody's porch.
I'm like, I just woke up on some stranger's porch. And I'm half naked. I'm
like,
where I'm at. You're like,
yeah,
oh, my God.
Like, I was like, oh, my God, are you serious?
And I'm like, psych. I'm like, I've been home for hours. So, yeah,
you were like, psych.
Yeah, you know, so I was home at a decent hour. And I'm getting older, you know. And so I'm actually kind of embracing not being in the nightclub every night as I used to be when I was in my 20s. And so I wanted to say it's Leo season. I'm continuing to enjoy Leo season. Happy birthday to all the Leos out there. Of course, we all are the best zodiac sign. And I love y'all a lot. And so
I do love Leo, though.
Yes,
I do.
On that note, Doc, we are out of time, so please say goodbye.
Bye.
Bye, everybody. Strange Fruit is produced by Louisville Public Media. Our editor is Laura Ellis. Our engineer is Kojin Toshiro.
For more information about Strange Fruit, visit strangefruitpod.org, like us on Facebook, or follow us on Twitter at strangefruitpod.
The views expressed on Strange Fruit do not reflect those of Louisville Public Media, its staff, or its underwriters.
Strange Fruit is produced by me, Kyla Story.
And me, Jason Gardner.
Thanks for listening.